Good morning. It is Wednesday, August 26, 2020, 10:04 a.m. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Crisman. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission, and I don't have any opening comments. I might have some follow-up remarks, but I don't have any opening comment. It's Commissioner Fedorchak.
My only opening comment is unrelated to PSC, and that is just a shout out to all the teachers and administrators that are getting back to work this week and next and last week. I think it's really important that we have our kids in school as much as possible, and am so thankful that we live in a state where this is possible and that the teachers are really trying hard to make it happen. So keep up the good work. Proud to be a North Dakotan.
Commissioner Crisman.
Well, if you recall, last time I didn't have any opening comments and said that next time I would, because there's a project that I've been waiting to get the final things in on that I'm really, really excited about. And it's a big milestone for this agency and especially for the Abandoned Mine Lands Division. We have been given an award by the Federal Office of Surface Mining.
We've received an award from the Federal Office of Surface Mines that we actually administer the program on kind of on their behalf for the highest quality projects in the nation. And the project in this case involves the Carrick Mine out northwest of New Salem that was done in 2018. In this case, there was about a 1,300-foot high wall up to about 40 feet high, so there's a lot of danger to people, to wildlife. There was a kind of a stagnant, poor quality water pond there. By the time we were done, there's a gentle slope, and there's a couple of water features that are connected by a stream. Horses graze there. It's a great wildlife opportunity now. Actually, the Morton County Soil Conservation District tacked on to the project yet and came out and planted a bunch of trees there. And in the process of this isn't one of our program guidelines, but an old tree stump, like a 6-foot diameter tree stump that I don't understand the science, whether it's more of a sequoia or more of a redwood, but it's kind of in that type of a tree. Unbelievable that a California-type tree was once growing in North Dakota. One of our scientists estimated it's like 50 million years old. Fascinating project. We were able to salvage that. The landowner has it at a place they intend to build a home site at some point. But just a super thing to among all the states that have all these old abandoned mine lands, and like in North Dakota, we are able to reclaim several of them each year. I really always try and emphasize that it's a federal program based on a federal tax on active coal mines, and without the support of the active coal mines doing this, none of this would be possible. These would just be problems left to the landowners to deal with, and so we're able to do this because of the active coal mining industry. I especially want to highlight three of our people. Matt Fisher is here. He's the PSC's Geographic Information Systems Specialist, and he creates and analyzes all this data, puts it all together. Joan Briner is our Assistant Director of Abandoned Mine Lands on the end there. She oversees these projects, which what our team does is actually plan them, go through the competitive bidding process, choose contractors to do the work. We don't have all these employees. We just plan, bid out, and then we supervise the projects during the course of the summer. And then Dean Mose, who's our director of both reclamation and abandoned mine lands, and they do wonderful work. It's even more wonderful that at this point, OSM has recognized this project. And so if you three had come up and the other commissioners, I'd like to get a picture up here. Stacy's ready to get
Yeah, just a second, Commissioner Crisman. I said I was going to dovetail on some comments because I didn't want to start with them to instill your thunder. But you know, fantastic job to the staff, and this is exciting. This does not happen very often, so it's exciting. And again, I think it's just a shining example of how energy development should occur in the state. This was delayed in a sense, but now it is being reclaimed, or it has been reclaimed, and it's just a good, again, a great example of how it should happen once the land is no longer being utilized for extraction, whether it's coal, oil, gas, or anything else. So.
And by the way, mining ceased at the Carrick Mine in the mid-50s, and it's been sitting out there ever since, and now it's all restored. So
congratulations.
Yay. We probably should also highlight Jordan Burns is a former engineer who's not with the commission anymore that worked on this project, as well as Bill Dodd, who used to be our AML director. So.
How do you want this?
I don't know. I haven't got that out. So just come on up here.
Can we do one like this? Sure. Come on, everybody, thumbs up. Thumbs good up, work. Okay, one more. All right, got it.
And by the way, one more thing, Amy, and whoever else is listening. Matt put together a 4-minute video. I haven't even seen it yet. It's that fresh off the press. But if anybody would like to review that before doing a story or for any other reason, contact Stacy. We'll figure out how to get it out.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the 50 million year old stump. I was in the national park on Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And went up to the top of a flat. There's a petrified forest within the park. I'd never been there, even though the ranch isn't that far away. So hiked in, took a look, and yeah, they're 50 to 60 million year old remnants of, I guess it used to look like the Everglades, according to the literature up on the top of the flats in the Badlands and other parts of the state. And it's changed a little bit over time.
By the way, the stump is 50 million and 2 years old now. 2018 is 50 million.
And, so are you...
Didn't you say it was so well preserved it doesn't look a day over 30 million?
So are you saying coal-fired power generation isn't the only cause of global climate change?
Well, apparently when Lake Agassiz, when the glaciers melted, I believe, up in the Hudson Bay area, and Lake Agassiz retreated, there was something going on with that as well.
Craziness. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. We do wonderful work up there, and that doesn't get expressed enough.
Yes. Well, this has already been a fantastic day, and I don't know. Let's just stop there. I don't know how it gets any better, because even though my motions and paperwork are really exciting, they're just not in the same category.
I can say mine aren't nearly as exciting.
No, these are necessary business, but yeah, again, congrats. To the three of you, to the portfolio holder, Commissioner Christman, and then to the rest of the staff, throughout that helps support everything you do. Okay, there are 15 items on consent and the previous minutes. I move approval.
Second.
Sorry, Randy. We have a
motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay.
All right, moving into the regular agenda. My first item, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and public service commission, Damian Dvorak, damage prevention enforcement, case number PU-20-202.
Second.
This is related to a complaint that came in on May 6th of 2020 this year. The commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint alleging a violation by Damian Dvorak of North Dakota Century Code, Section 49-23, on May 7th. Commission advocacy staff sent a letter of the complaint, and on May 12th received supplemental information regarding the May 6th complaint. On May 18th, Mr. Dvorak did send a response back to the commission related to the complaint. And on July 29th of 2020, a consent agreement between staff and Mr. Dvorak was filed for the resolution of the North Dakota One Call complaint. This occurred in the Park River, North Dakota area. An individual was digging up fence posts, putting in new ones in his yard. Someone observed the individual doing that, did not see that the area was marked, called in a one-call complaint, and as the consent agreement was worked out with Mr. Dvorak, or one was able to be worked out, it entails a civil penalty of $500, with that amount being suspended. So all of it is actually suspended on the condition that Mr. Dvorak commit no further violations of North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 49-23, which is the one-call law, within 5 years of the date of the order. This was, again, something that I think is a pretty common thing. People are putting in fences and residential areas. They're doing landscaping, things of that nature. And it's important that they always call in. The neighbor that did call in was familiar with the North Dakota One Call Law and realized that it wasn't marked. And with safety concerns in mind, I believe, called in the complaint. And this is a typical route that the commission has taken in the past. Homeowners and landowners oftentimes will get a suspended amount if they are agreeable to a settlement, which indicates that they've acknowledged that there is a was a violation. They know in the future to call. And again, it's just incredibly important. It's been a little hot over the last several days, but as we get into fall, people are going to start going out and a lot of times, and we've talked about this so many, you know, over and over again, but a lot of times during the landscaping process, a line that might have been buried 48 inches below the surface of the ground now is only 14 to 15 inches below. And you've got a post hole digger and you think you're okay, but, you know, final grading can change line depth, and it's just important to always get the lines marked. So always call 811 before any type of a project, whether it's commercial or whether you're a homeowner. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any comments.
Commissioner Fisman?
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, next I move the commission adopt the order on settlement agreement in Northern States Power Company Advanced Prudence 98.9 Mower County Wind Facility Application, case number PU-19-310.
Second.
This was related to an application that was received on August 30th, 2019 from Northern States Power Company, NSP. And they filed that with the commission seeking an advanced determination of prudence for the purchase of the 98.9 megawatt resource addition in Mower. Is it Mower County or Moore? County.
Not sure.
I'm going to go with Mower County just because it's Minnesota and former Twins baseball player. I'll remember it that way. On March 4th, 2020, the commission did issue a notice of hearing. We scheduled a hearing that was on May 22nd, 2020, and it was held as noticed, and it was held remotely as well, which is obviously common practice now that we are in the midst of the pandemic and taking extra precautions. So this is to upgrade. NSP intends to purchase an upgraded 98.9 megawatt wind generation facility, the Mower County Wind Facility located in Grand Meadow, Mower County, Minnesota. This facility actually began commercial operation in 2006, and it will be upgraded prior to purchase by NSP. NSP is currently has a purchase power agreement for the facility. And again, the facility is already on the ground. It's 14 years old now. So this isn't about additional generation or new generation or the building of a new facility. This is really about how that facility is owned and operated. So the PPA, the purchase power agreement, will go away, and then this will just become an asset addition for NSP if this is approved. NSP's economic analysis indicated that based on a 25-year life, the purchase of the facility will produce between $44 and $49 million in total future savings. That is consistent with a range that advocacy staff, which was a wider range, but nonetheless would still be consistent with what advocacy staff came up with when they analyzed the numbers. And as a provision of this agreement, customers are protected should NSP fail to obtain 100% of the existing federal renewable electricity production tax credits for the facility. This is happening around the country, and there are several instances or examples of individuals that have gone on record as saying that the repowering is not necessarily because it's completely wore out, but more so it's being driven by the production tax credit expiration or expiring. So a lot of companies are moving faster on these projects than they normally would. And to be honest, I do have mixed emotions on that when you have a facility that isn't quite at the end of its useful life. And because of production tax credits and the fact that they've been extended but are going to expire in the next year. And that's a driving force behind this. Ultimately, it's something that taxpayers have to pick up the tab on. The challenging part as well, though, is if the facility isn't owned by NSP, they would in fact continue to pay a higher rate than through ownership, which would mean customers would have to pay a little bit more for that same energy. So, we could get into a lot of philosophical discussions on this, at the end of the day, it's the upgrading of 43 2.3 megawatt turbines with some turbine components and larger rotor blades is what's going to happen. In North Dakota's jurisdictional share on the numbers that I did cite would be 5.6%. So you would take the 44-45 million times 5.6%, that would be North Dakota's jurisdictional share. It will actually decrease utility bills for NSP customers very slightly, but it will decrease them nonetheless and then add up over the course of time. So I'm going to support the order because it is good for North Dakota ratepayers. Not supporting the order would be, in my opinion, punitive toward those same ratepayers because the majority are still paying federal taxes. And even though it's an indirect benefit, it is a benefit nonetheless. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any comments.
Commissioner Crispin?
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, the next one's a little easier. I move the commission adopt the order in Northern States Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery Tariff Case Number PU-20-259.
Second.
Okay, this relates to a June 5th application from NSP seeking approval to modify its transmission facility cost recovery tariff. And so they wanted to improve the language and clarify the methodology used to annually true up recovery of qualifying costs in this particular rider, the transmission facility cost recovery rider. We did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on July 8th. We provided until August 22nd of this year, 2020, for receiving requests. None were received, so we're just 4 days later. moving forward with presenting an order to be voted on. And again, this updates the tariff language to reflect how we do annual true-ups, how we're currently doing them, and now the tariff language will more closely align with the methodology used in those calculations. And really, that's to adjust income and expense on an annual basis. There are no changes in rates today as a result of this. It's just going to be a little better for the overall process. Commissioner Fedorchuk, any comments?
Nope, no comments.
Commissioner Christman? Nope.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and my last item, I move the commission find the complaint filed by Nodak Electric Cooperative Incorporated on July 29th, 2020, states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent in North Dakota Electric Cooperative Incorporated versus Otter Tail Power Company complaint, case number PU-20-356.
Second.
This is related to a customer that is located in or will be located just outside of the city of Drayton. There will be a new Love's truck stop put in just to the west of Drayton and just on the west side of I-29. And Nodak Electric, according to the letter and information that they did send, they had begun work with this customer, potential, you know, future customer, on providing service to them. The talks essentially stopped at some point, and then Nodak Electric noticed that Otter Tail had done some line marking. You know, there's some moving parts to this. The place to be served, which would be, again, Love's Truck Stop, but in terms of the location itself, is now located within the corporate city limits of Drayton because it was annexed in after the site was chosen by the customer, so it happened after the fact. And that also resulted in some of Nodak's facilities being annexed into the city of Drayton as well. Nodak contends that a service agreement between Nodak and Otter Tail dictates that Nodak should serve the site. And also noted, Nodak has a single-phase line that intersects the place to be served and a three-phase line that is directly adjacent to the place to be served. Based on the initial site plan provided by the customer, Nodak could then extend service to the customer versus Otter Tail, which according again to what has been docketed, Otter Tail Power would have to bore under Interstate 29, cross over Nodak's existing lines due to the fact that Otter Tail has no facilities adjacent to the property capable of serving the load. So this is a TIA case, a Territorial Integrity Act case. And just a reminder on the Territorial Integrity Act was put in place by the legislature years ago to prevent the duplication of service and infrastructure development and to ensure orderly development as well in terms of who would be able to serve the particular site and the customers. So different factors will be in play, including whether or not, which supplier is best qualified to furnish electric service to the site, also preventing wasteful duplication of investment service, and while not an overarching factor, customer preference is also a consideration amongst others. So we'll have to listen to both parties. They'll both be able to make their case on this, and this is just the first step in a process that will continue to occur. You know, assuming some type of an agreement and settlement isn't reached between the two parties prior to what could ultimately become a hearing situation. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any comments.
Commissioner Christman?
I'm glad that these TIA cases are far fewer than they used to be, that more tools are in place for the companies to resolve these differences. But when they do come, they always seem to be complicated and interesting. So we'll deal with it as it comes.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my agenda items. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have, I think, four items on my docket here today. I move the commission adopt the order on continuing suitability in Basin Electric Power Cooperative Lonesome Creek Station Phase 3 project, citing application case number PU-14-852.
Second.
So this is a generation facility, the Lonesome Creek 1, 2, and 3, a gas power generation facility that Basin Electric owns out in McKenzie County. And we originally permitted this project site on April 29th of 2015, and it was permitted for three phases of the project, three 45-megawatt simple-cycle combustion turbines. Basin has completed and constructed two of those projects, and they want to now construct the third, and this is just sort of a formality that they have to come to us because the original siting certificate has technically expired. They have to come and just certify that the designated site continues to meet the conditions upon which the certificate was issued. So we've done a notice of opportunity for hearing on this. The public had until August 23rd to provide comments, and no requests for a hearing have been received. So Basin certified that the third planned 45-megawatt simple-cycle turbine will be constructed as originally proposed within the fenced area of the Lonesome Creek Station on previously graded land within the existing site. So I think all the steps have been taken to certify that this site continues to be suitable for this project. And just what remains is approving this motion today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in OE2 North LLC, 8-inch NGL and 20-inch residue gas pipelines, Williams County siting application, case number PU-20-247.
Second.
So on June 3rd of this year, OE2 North filed with us a combined application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 1.28-mile-long natural gas liquids pipeline and a 4.67-mile-long residue gas pipeline in Williams County. On August 6th, the hearing was held on this project as scheduled via live remote communication, allowing any interested parties to present testimony via telephone. The opportunity for written public comments remained open until August 13th of 2020. So OE2 intends to construct an approximately these two lines, one to carry NGLs, approximately a little over a mile, and another to carry the residue gas, a little over 4 miles. The 8-inch pipeline will carry the NGLs to an interconnection point with a One Oak pipeline that will take those NGLs out of state. The 20-inch pipeline will carry residue gas from the Bill Sanderson gas plant to an interconnection point with the Northern Border pipeline. The NGL pipeline will have a flow rate of up to 80,000 barrels per day, and the residue gas pipeline will have a flow rate of up to 250 million cubic feet per day. The estimated cost of the project is $6 million, and the estimated service date is December of 2020. The company completed all the studies, surveys, and agency consultations. They did not record any exclusion areas within the survey area. There were some previously recorded historical sites that are not specifically designated as exclusion or avoidance areas. OE2 testified that the project route will not impact the historical sites identified, and there were not any other avoidance areas within the survey area. They testified that they will cross all wetlands and water bodies using horizontal directional drilling. The project will be designated, constructed, and operated in accordance with the U.S. DOT regulations governing the transportation of natural gas and hazardous liquids pipelines. OE2 will have third-party construction inspectors on site during construction who will oversee the environmental mitigation measures, and the construction inspectors will have the authorities to stop construction activities and to require corrective mitigation. The entire project is co-located with existing infrastructure and in existing utility corridors. And OE2 will participate in the North Dakota One Call notification system. So those are the highlights of the permit. There's other mitigation measures that the company has agreed to take involving weed control and dust mitigation, et cetera. But that said, I think this project is in order and ready to support this motion in order today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I will say, just like that abandoned mine lands award, this project is another one of those that makes me so darn proud to be a part of this team. You know, when this application was sitting here this spring, not sitting here a long time, but it arrived this spring, and the gas plant was one of the first projects where we held a remote hearing after the kind of the chaos of the COVID. And we were one of the first regulatory bodies in the nation that figured out how to do that and meet all the laws. We held it. Had that gas plant project been delayed, you know, you see so many projects that have been put off because of the impacts of the oil and gas industry from COVID. Who knows whether they'd have started construction had we not been timely with our process last spring. Kudos to you, Commissioner Fedorchuk, on leading that charge. But as I've watched the updates from the gas plant, they've made extraordinary progress. It's kind of a newer company, I think, to North Dakota projects. I don't know why the delay on them filing this application, but I know you and our team have really moved things along, you know, within the legal requirements for notices and such, but as quickly as possible here. And with this approval today, if we have the votes, they seem to still feel they can get these pipelines done, and that gas plant and the associated pipelines can all be up and operational by freeze-up time this winter. Tremendous work on the behalf of this agency.
Yeah, I agree.
When I was, I think it was about a week and a half ago, was asked by, I don't know if it was on the radio, it might have been on the radio, but I was asked how the restart was going, and my response was, we never closed. Mm-hmm. We just kept moving forward on all fronts and figured out how to get it done. So I would echo Commissioner Crispin's thoughts. Kudos, Commissioner Fedorchuk. And I also received some comments that on a prior project, not this one, but a prior project after it was approved, that had we not moved forward at the, you know, the normal anticipated pace, it probably wouldn't have been built, because companies are scaling back on capital investment right now. Oil and gas companies are. That's just a reality with low pricing, that they're more conservative and more careful with how they're applying funds that they do have on hand, waiting for prices to improve. So that ultimately, when that happens, it does slow things down, and it impacts jobs in the Bakken and development in the Bakken, and that has a negative ripple effect, because those funds are used to support schools and emergency services, social programs throughout the state. So it's good that we can keep moving forward in the fashion that we have.
Is there any further discussion?
My only other comment would be hats off to Adam Redenpant, who really was the staff lead on this and did a great job of getting what we needed and pushing it through as quickly as possible, without, you know, shortchanging any of the processes. So good job, Adam.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. My third motion, I move the commission adopt the order in Dakota Prairie Refining LLC, amend certificate number 151, permit number 162 and 163, citing application case number PU-20-263.
Second.
So in 2013, December of 2013, the commission issued a certificate to Dakota Prairie Refining and Lario Shipping for corridor compatibility and a route for some pipelines serving Dakota Prairie Refining. This summer in June, they submitted a request to the commission adopted our order transfer, or we transferred their certificates. That's right. And then they requested that they want to amend the order of findings of facts and conclusions of law to change how they operate the pipeline. So on July 8th, we issued this notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until August 10th for comments and requests for hearing, and no comments or requests have been received. So basically, Dakota Prairie requests an amendment of the commission's 2013 order of findings, facts, and conclusions of law. It intends to cease crude oil refining operations at the Dakota Prairie refinery and produce renewable diesel fuel by refining liquid soybean and corn oil products. The amendment requested by Dakota Prairie is to use the 8-inch pipeline for the transmission of liquid soy product from the Lario Shipping LLC rail hub, now known as the Dickinson Rail Terminal, to the Dakota Prairie refinery, and to use a 6-inch pipeline for the transmission of renewable diesel fuel from Dakota Prairie refinery to the Dickinson Rail Terminal. So this is a really cool adaptation of that refinery. They want to start taking liquid soybean oil into the refinery on one of the pipelines and then process that, and then transferring out of that will be this renewable diesel fuel. And that will go to markets all over the country, most largely out to California, where they get a tax incentive to use the renewable diesel fuel. And it really helps make that Dickinson, that Dakota Prairie refinery a lot more economic. And they're using our ag products, refining them into a fuel, and submitting it to markets where that there's a demand for that. And it's just really a great marriage between our agriculture and our energy economies. And it's a really innovative project and has great promise for the future. So what's really great about it is it's using all existing infrastructure and just modifying them slightly to make better use. And so it's just a win-win-win all the way around. I love this project. I think that this order is very reasonable. The location of the pipelines won't change. The proposed revisions to operation of the pipelines will not produce any incremental adverse effects on the environment or upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota. So I think we are perfectly in order to approve this change and wish them the best in this new endeavor.
Commissioner Christman?
Nope.
I think it's really exciting, too. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the current environment underscores the importance of having more value-added facilities in North Dakota, and a biofuel refinery making biodiesel is a great example of that. And is this the third set of owners for the facility? I'm thinking it was originally built by MDU, and then was it purchased by?
I think it was. Was it purchased by Tesoro, but then became then Endeavor? Became, so it was just kind of part of that
Endeavor, and ultimately Marathon.
Yeah. So it switched owners through that process. Mm-hmm. But
I think this would be third.
But that was just like. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was sold off three times. It was just part of the transfer of the assets owned by Endeavor.
I think it's been sold once, but it's on like fourth different name.
Yeah.
Second different fuel source.
Yeah.
hopefully this is the right formula for success for that facility, because it helps the ag community, helps the energy community, and helps the state overall. So hopefully this is the winning formula.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I sure didn't imagine when we sited the pipeline for petroleum that it was ultimately going to be for soy.
Soybean and corn oil.
Who knows what happens in 7 years?
It was a bold step when you look at refinery development across the country. It was a very bold step to put a refinery, a greenfield refinery in place.
It was at the time one of the first greenfield refineries in 20 years.
It was the past three decades.
When they constructed it.
So it was a bold move, and it's good that we have companies in the state that are interested in operating in the state that are interested in being aggressive in that sense, but it was just a little too much of a lift, and ownership did transfer several times, and now hopefully again this is the winning formula.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
And my last motion, I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in FPL Energy Oliver Wind 1 LLC, Oliver Wind 1 LLC transfer dash certificate number 92 and permit number 102 citing application case number PU-20-3364.
Second.
On August 14th of this year, FPL Energy Oliver Wind 1 LLC filed and Oliver Wind 1 LLC, apparently those are two different entities, filed a joint application to transfer the quarter certificate number 92 and route permit 102 from FPL Energy Oliver Wind 1 LLC to Oliver Wind 1 LLC. So we have a process that needs to take place for this. Anyone interested in commenting or having concerns about this should send their comments and requests for hearing to us by September 30th of 2020.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Based on our previous discussion about name changes and fuel source changes, does that mean that they're switching from wind to wind?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, they got rid of FPL Energy and just became FPL Energy Oliver Wind 1, and now they're going to just be Oliver Wind 1.
Oh, okay. That's
big difference. Must be different. Corporate entities or business entities.
Steve,
is there any further discussion?
Please save us with a vote.
Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
That fortunately concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Chrisman.
Okay, my first item, I move the commission authorize staff to issue additional change orders to increase the amount of contract number AM-827-20 with Danhart Patrol Service LLC by an amount of $90,000 for additional work in the Public Service Commission's 2020 Hedinger and Stark Counties AML project, case number AM-20-180.
Second.
So this project involves the elimination of dangerous high walls, like the award-winning project we talked about earlier, but in this case, at four different abandoned surface mines in Hedinger and Stark counties. And altogether, about 30 acres will be reclaimed. Work has been progressing concurrently at two of the four mine sites. The projects are moving along at a good pace, but due to unforeseen site conditions at both sites, a change order will be needed to pay the contractor for the extra work required. The Bresh mine, which is northwest of Dickinson, has been used as an illegal dumping site for over 50 years. And just joined Joan and Jonathan out there last week, and it's mostly cleaned up, but still, what a terrible mess. Once the contractor started the sort and haul out of the waste, a large amount of waste we found was actually discovered partially buried, and so that required more effort and costs than initially anticipated, because all this waste is being hauled to a landfill where it belongs. Then at the Regent mine, the contractors began sloping the area with scrapers, but encountered a rock layer that's about 6 inches thick, along with some really big boulders buried in the ground. And the presence of those boulders and the rock ledge dries up the cost of doing the work. They had to come in now with dozers instead of using the more efficient scrapers. They were not anticipated because the high wall was covered with vegetation and the boulders, of course, were buried. So the AML division requests commission authorization to increase the contract by $90,000, which is about a 28% increase. The contractor is willing to do the additional work under the terms of the original contract. And our grant does have the funds available, too.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Nothing like getting a big award on the day you need an increase in your funding source for the new project, huh?
Another award-winning project in the making.
Yeah, that one. Oofta.
Okay, second item, I move the commission adopt the order in Consolidated Communications Enterprises Services, Fargo Rate Center, Numbering Resources, case number PU-20-199.
Second.
On January 20th of this year, Consolidated Communications submitted a request to the North American Pooling Administration System for additional numbering resources consisting of a block of 1,000 numbers out of the Fargo Rate Center. That very same day, the pooling administration denied the request, obviously just based on a formula. On April 8th, Consolidated filed a request to us that the commission direct the North American Pooling Administration System to provide them with an additional 1,000-number block. On August 7th, the City of West Fargo filed with our staff a description of the need for the new block of 1,000 numbers. Now, under FCC rules, state commissions may grant a waiver of the FCC rules and grant requests for additional numbering resources when there is demonstrated verifiable need. In support of the request with the commission, Consolidated provided a copy of the City of West Fargo's request for the phone numbers. So based on the specific need demonstrated, staff recommends the commission grant Consolidated Communications request, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
I should probably mention, it's kind of nice that the FCC, you know, they have their process, but they do have in place a procedure whereby if the normal formula maybe doesn't make sense and there really is a need, that they rely on the state commission there to be able to recognize that and basically overrule a federal agency. So,
I was surprised we had this authority.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice setup, I think.
Yeah.
Last item, I move the commission adopt the order granting request for auction school course approval in Missouri Auction School. Auction school course approval online. Application case number AU-20-372.
Second.
Under our administrative code, an auction school must apply to us to have its course of approval of study approved. The in-residence course for the Missouri Auction School is currently approved. On August 13th, they filed a request for approval of their online course. Among other things, to be approved, a course of study must require students to complete at least 60 hours of study in the presence of school instructors, with at least 40 of those 60 hours under the supervision of a licensed auctioneer with at least 5 years of experience. And they must provide instruction in ethics, bid calling, sales management, advertising, contracts, accounting and bookkeeping, real estate appraisals, closing statements, license law, uniform commercial codes, tax collection, bulk sales, and firearms. So jamming all that into 60 hours, I just have concluded on my own they probably don't have a lot of extracurriculars at these schools. The Missouri Auction School exceeds the required hours. Their program actually provides for 80 hours of instruction in the specific areas of studying related to the auction business. They also provided information for their online course involving a number of things, and three of them that were of particular interest to me include the validation of a student's identity during enrollment, the verification of the student's identity during the coursework, and the tracking of a student's attendance and course programs. So the online course has been approved for use in 9 other states already. Staff recommends that we approve the course for North Dakota, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. We just have a few announcements. At 1:30 today, Otter Tail Power Company, we will be having a periodic information exchange meeting. Those are always good to hear what they're up to. On Tuesday, September 1st at 11 a.m., a MISO biannual update will occur. And at 2:30 on the same day, Tuesday, September 1st, the same biannual update will be held with the SPP RTO. And the numbers, if anyone wishes to listen in, we will have access to those meetings. And that's listed on the commission website. And then our next regular commission meeting is on Wednesday, September 9th at 10 a.m. And again, individuals can enter the Capitol. You'll be screened for any of the actually proceedings. You'll be screened on the way in if you choose to want to be at any of these meetings in person, or they are accessible online through the public bridge. And again, the numbers are readily available on the PSC website. So we welcome any type of interaction, as always. We'll now take a brief recess, take questions from the press, and then we'll reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. And looking at the length of the admin agenda, if anyone wants to make a break for it, this would probably be the time. So we are now.
What time are we going to reconvene? Because I would like a little bit of a break just to go to the restroom.
Well, I'll see how long the questions go, and then we'll make a determination. But we'll take a break after press questions. We are now in recess.